South Spring, a church plant of First Baptist, one of the many, has some things that y'all have probably all heard. This is our vision. Our pillars are hospitality, discipleship, and devotion. Our mission is we exist to live, teach, and tell the gospel so that all may encounter the living God. And then our key phrase, every member is a member. Minister. Every member is a member is also true. Every member is a minister is our philosophy. It's how we live this out so everyone can know it. When we look at this in our church, the important part of this that we need to know is how it encounters a visitor, how it encounters our hearts and a visitor's heart in this, all of these things. All of these things, again, you've been on Wednesday nights, hopefully, or different things. If you need a refresher on where we scripturally found and chose and why we chose, it's all on the website. And I hope you go back and see that. The Who Is SSBC classes are online. You can go and watch those. Those will remind you why these were picked out and prayed over and planted in the vision of our church and how we live it out. And so the interesting thing about being on staff here is I've been on staff at other churches. My dad's a pastor. My grandfather is a pastor. So church is not a new experience for me. But what has been a new experience for me here is the level of friendship that comes in working here. And so part of it is years of history of people knowing each other for years. And part of it is, honestly, the demand, a demand to be friends, can you do that? But the expectation that is the culture that we will have. We do that because we live in hospitality and in discipleship and being devoted together. And that's been a unique experience, and so be proud that that's the culture being created over here by Chris. There's two different ways you can organize the staff. Here's the one that a lot of people would look at it this way, so you can see all of these things and who's in charge and doing what. This is how Chris Legg looks at it. He wants to say he does not know our job titles. He knows the person. So if you ask him who does that, he wouldn't say, "Oh, that's our pastor of engagement." He'd probably say, "That's Lance Sturrock." And that is a unique way to do it, and that's how we want to do it. There's a level of family, friendship, and hospitality in knowing someone beyond what they do and what they're accountable for and all of that. So this right here, if you're looking at it, it's a lot of people. The bottom picture that has a husband in it, it's two people. That's Emily. She's not even on our website. I got a little embarrassed. She's been here a few months. If you haven't met her, that's our business administrator. Now I don't know her title. And she's wonderful. And her and her husband go to Church of the Pines, and they will help out in any way. But all of these people have different responsibilities and things, and there's two people we need to kind of dive in on. They're both in the room, so this will be interesting. Specifically what they do and why they're needed for life group ministry. The first, Chris Sherrod, discipleship minister. And life groups in the broadest sense of the way, Sunday morning, weekdays, that's all him. Two life groups that I wanted to pull out because I don't know if, and maybe this is just my assumption, I don't know if they're talked about enough because they're not Sunday morning or they haven't always been, is college and our young professionals. Those are two outreach ministries in our church that are going and vibrant in a lot of ways and growing in some very interesting ways. Chris Sherrod is nice enough to open his home and have a bunch of young professionals come in every Tuesday and all of that. So he's over that. Then men's and women's ministry, in the sense of lay leaders lead that. We want our lay leadership to take care of that in so many ways. Now, I get a little bit more of the women's ministry than he does. I think that's only fair. But we bounce that back and forth, but that is all him. And then things I wanted to specifically mention, just so y'all are aware of, are some areas of new growth, and that's regeneration. We actually have people going to training tomorrow And it is an outreach, a group for people who have addictions, who have things to overcome. We all do. They use addiction in a very broad sense of the word. It could be addiction to perfection. It could be addiction to pornography. It is this whole sense of that word. And so they're going to get trained, and we're looking to just broaden that ministry in our church. So if y'all know, if that was on one of your hearts and everything, y'all know someone to talk to and all of that. And then care for foster families. How many of you know Justin Hayes? Anyone in here? Okay. That man and his crew, he's got this whole team around him, is driving our community to be more and more aware of how to take care of foster families. The organization is called the Fostering Collective, and he is just getting us organized. He is getting us ready to handle how to love families that are broken, and so have someone added to their family. Wraparound families, all sorts of ministries and theirs and things. So you have life group questions, life group needs, ideas, all those things, it's Chris Sherrod. That does not mean you can't go to another staff member and talk through or whatever, but we're ultimately going to point you to him and all of that. The other person, we have to talk about is Lance. So pastor of engagement, Lance Sturrock. And then he has a cohort, a hospitality team coordinator. That position is open, so we'll be praying about that in a second. But the reason we need to know about that as life group leaders in this church is because a lot of times people who join life groups want to join our church. We need to know about it, and so they need to know about who is SSBC classes, our welcome home process. They need to know about hospitality and all of that. Once someone comes on our property and experiences the church, they often want to have family events here, parties, all of that, outreaches and things, and so need to be aware of it. And then just engaging someone. As you are talking to a friend in your life on those one-on-one conversations, Lance Sturrock is the Swiss Army knife that you need in so many ways. He is a tool who knows people in our community. He loves to help someone find the right job. He loves to help someone find the right place in our church and all of those things. And he will, in the best way, hunt you down to get you in the right place if you tell him that is what you need. And so Lance handles the detailed side of our things. In the calendaring and all of that, he and his department will do that. So if you want AC and, you know, lights and things like that, somewhere in this process, you have to go to Lance, too. So Lance and Chris head up in those two ways of just the details of this ministry. So Chris joked about the childish side of me, and I wanted to just remind y'all, how many of you read the book to your kids, if you give a moose a muffin, if you give a mouse a cookie, all those books, years and years and years. Okay, so as I was thinking about this process and thinking about how we need to talk about it, I kept thinking about, what if we wrote a book and it was called If You Ask a Leader to Teach? So here's my leap at an attempt. If you ask a leader to teach, they will need a classroom. They will want a C for their students' comfort and then to keep everyone awake. But then they need a key, a dry erase board, an eraser, a podium, a trash can, and lights. And if they are enjoying their space, their class will grow and continue. They will then need to find the remote, the HDMI cord, the adapter, the Mac adapter, the extension cord, the bigger TV, and then the remote again. It always gets misplaced in this process. Passwords are then needed for the internet, for Right Now Media, the Shelby database, and so on. Oh. And how have we gone this long without giving them access to bathrooms, kids programming, the cool playground, the outdoor playground, the kitchen, and the little red golf cart? And as you found out, if you give the teacher the support they need, encouragement, help, and friendship, if you give them any of this, then they will need another new building or another new temporary building, and anything new will mostly go to our children and youth. And so, thank y'all for that, by the way. So, y'all just think about it. But just the idea of, I forget how easy it is to, I think it's easy sometimes to just get a group of people together. Like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to create a group. And then when you think about all that has to go in it, and there was so many things that I didn't go into, like part of me almost went into creating the graphic and asking Elizabeth to get it in the Connect and who's going to clean up and just getting it announced. And like there were all those things like that had to go on beside that too. And so I want y'all to know the reason we have process is to hopefully make it easier and less overwhelming. Because it is a lot of things. To lead a group in a structure, which we do need, in this thing called church for the accountability, for the gospel, for all those things, to be called family and all of that, it takes a lot to happen. And so just remember the idea of what we actually need to offer one another in this process. And know you're not gonna ask too many questions. You can ask us again. You can ask us all you need to. We will walk through with you. And really, I should say, the people, you get to ask Chris and you get to ask Lance all over and over and over on this, and they will handle it. And that's part of it. One of the other things we wanted to talk about is why I use the word life groups. So right 2 years before we started talking about becoming a church plant, we had a group called Oxano come in. And Oxano was this, like, I mean, they work with Disney, and they work with all these people, and they were just this very, very impressive, great group. And they helped us come up with all of our mission statements, our vision statements, just all those philosophies and stuff, and they helped us walk through that. Well, one of the cool things they reminded us of in this process, it was a very precise thing they said, was every time you give something a new title, a new program, there you can create this mindset that it's another thing someone needs to do. So instead of having Sunday morning Bible studies or Sunday school and then life groups and then Wednesday night church and all these things, it's not that any of that is bad. It was hoping that we narrow it down so that you, in our natures, don't create a checklist out of it that created way more things than we were asking of you. We want you to know your church and be involved in corporate worship. We want you to serve, and we want you to know and be friends with others, to live in community. So that's why it is this, and I don't mean it's ugly, but a swamp of a word a little bit. It feels really, really big, is because we want to make sure it's this free market. Create what you need. There's going to be some types of groups where you're going to need to create a situation where you bring in a few people for a short season of time. And we'll talk about that more in just a second. But it creates this moment of where we're saying, make the flexibility of your life. Just be in community. Create community in your life. And it is easier for some people and harder for others. So creating this word like that says, here you go, just make it happen. Life groups, that's what we're offering. We need Sunday morning life groups. We need it, it is a necessary thing. We also need weekday life groups. So that people can have them, and it is it. And if you're in both, if you're on a Sunday morning and a weekday, that's great. But taking away the option where someone felt like the church was requiring you do both was one of the things they brought up to us. We're going to watch a little video. This is one of Chris's friends, Johnny Moore, and he'll introduce himself. But he's going to talk about what does it look like to have a plan.
Hey, South Spring, it's exciting to hear what you guys are doing down there in Tyler. May the Lord use you mightily as you reach out to that community for His kingdom work. My name is Johnny, and I have the privilege of working with a great church in the East area of San Francisco, California, and I have the privilege of working with our men's ministry, our marriage ministry, as well as our community initiative, which is actually reaching out to our community as well. And so, a few days back, Chris Lake reached out to me to answer a couple questions for your video training. And so the first topic is, how And the second one is, how do you know when to adapt or change that plan? So we'll start with the first one. How important is the plan? And I want to start by talking about a statement I heard a long time ago. It's easier to go from organization to disorganization than to go from disorganization to organization. If you think about that powerful statement, I believe it is critical to the plan and process. If you do not have a plan, you can actually end up in a disorganization, which would eventually negatively impact your discipleship process. And so having a plan is critical to what you are doing. Within having a plan, you need to know a few key components. The first one being what? Knowing what the church's goal is for the small groups. Once you know what the desired outcome is, one can work backwards on putting together steps to achieve that goal. And it's always critical to keep that goal in front of all of your small group leaders. That way you are unified in your mission and purpose. The second part is who. Who are we trying to minister to? Is it mature believers? Is it young believers in the faith? Or is it possibly even non-believers? Who are we trying to reach out to? Or is it a consensus of all three? That has to be decided on as well. Number four, or let me back up here. Is it also multi-generational, or is it multicultural? Those are all factors that you want to play into those decisions of the plan. The third one would be how. What tools are you given to help achieve meeting the goal? So are there study tools that you will be using to minister to your small groups, such as a campaign, a small group? Are they sermon-based studies? Whatever that tool is, what are those tools that you're going to be using to empower your people that are in your small group? And the second one is, what are the tools to help you grow personally as well? I've often said, if you are not growing, then the people around you are not growing. You have to be growing in the Lord. So coming to the end of that, so knowing what your goal is, you can build a plan to help meet that goal as soon as possible. The second question is, how do you know when to adapt the plan? This is a critical process in the meeting of your goals. How you know if the goals of the ministry are being realized is key. There should always be an ongoing review process to evaluate if the ministry is meeting the need of the biblical discipleship process. This could be done on a weekly basis, it could be on a monthly basis, or however you guys decide, but it needs to be a process. I've had the privilege to work with a leadership at one point in my life that had this motto, "We've never arrived." There's a humility in that basis of to say, we're going to reevaluate everything so that we can make it the best that we can, because we serve a God of excellence. And so those are just a few key things, and I hope that helps you in the process of in your small group study, and may the Lord use you mightily. Have a great day.
Almost said thanks, Johnny, like he was there, but you know. but thank you, Johnny. Thank you. Now, we are going to take just a quick break because we're sitting at our tables the whole time. I'm not taking you in the woods. I'm sorry. But we're going to take a quick break. When you come back to your table, y'all could go ahead and start answering a question that we just need to be thinking about all the time. It is, I would love for you to share with your group, what are you doing to grow in the Word? What are you personally doing in all of those things? So we'll be back here at 6:15. If you get back early, you can start, and then we'll come back up here at 6:20 to talk together. So, and yeah, y'all can go. Life groups, in the generic sense, we're not watching the video again. There are three ways you can do it, and then they divide out more, but a group whose goal is to multiply people. Another way to even look at that is like to motivate people. So this is still in the very, very beginning idea stage, so don't hold this one to me if it doesn't happen, and you're like, I didn't see it. But there is a group who's thinking about doing a North American Mission Board study all about some people who wanted to look at what it, does it look like to minister across the races. And that's, they have a study all on that online. It's 6 weeks. And so their goal was to, I asked them, I said, so what do you want to do with that? And their goal was to meet and do that. Therefore, they could talk more freely about race with other people through in the community. And they were there, it was a set time, but it was to multiply their conversation, multiply their wisdom in that sense. So often they have a goal date and all that. Semester group, it could fall in that category too. It has an end date. Y'all are in a semester group. It's 10 weeks. It's all of that right now. And then Sunday morning. These can have some really great things community-wise that occur in them. It makes someone feel who's come into a traditional, especially a traditional Baptist church, feel very comfortable to go to class and then to worship. There's a comfort in that. They understand it. It brings them all of that. And so having those groups provide that. And then our classes are of a depth and understanding where they're going to hear the word in that group and hear friendship and all of that. The other thing it does is it catches people in a busy week. So Sunday mornings, you're typically in the Christian community, you're already setting aside that time and all those things. Where then, and any group who does this, where these can get into harder side is we've created a class, you have a teacher, and so they're just open and unending. We don't set a goal and we don't set an end date. And so, if you are asked to be a Sunday morning teacher, over the next years and stuff, as we get better at talking and being with each other in this way, we're going to need to check in on you on those ways. Hey, what's your goal right now? What's your purpose of your class? How are things going? Do you need to rotate off? Does your class need to end? Is there a new thing that needs to start? All those questions are good and part of it, and that's why there's multiple ways to do it and all these things. It is interesting what questions bring up. So one of the things, we've had people walk into a class and say, get comfortable in a class and all of this, and someone say, are you here? You're going to join our class? And as a new person in our church or visiting or whatever, they feel, can, depending on where they are, very taken back by that question. And it's this language we have to be aware of on what we are offering people on a Sunday morning. Are you going to join our class? In my mind, it feels like very inclusive. I'm asking you to be a part of. And for someone who was just testing it out, it feels very, kind of territorial, like you're pushing me here and are you going to join my class and all of this. I think Sunday morning dynamic, that group has the most nuances that you need to walk through on the type of person that could come in your room. It's not a set roster. It is a set roster, and we have a set roster, but anyone can show up. If you're having those semester groups or whatever, you typically know who's coming, and it's the same people, and you know they're going to text if they're not going to make it, and so it takes some of those nuances out of it. On the Sunday morning, you don't know who is coming in your room. And the language we need to be aware of is how we treat that. And training our greeters in such a way where they're aware of what words they use in encountering someone. And so just if your class hasn't thought about that, on how you ask someone about their class, instead of, are you joining our classes, hey, would you come back next week and sit with us? That may be the way to do it. And just all of those things until you get those things, relationships built where you can ask a next step question. Normal church language, to join a class, normal for us, not normal. The other thing is a closed versus full statement. We will use language where we'll say groups are closed or groups are full. And again, neither of those words are wrong. It is just we need to be clear on what they're communicating, what they're saying to someone. To say that this group is closed, we need to make sure if we create a group in our church and it is a closed group and someone hears about it and wants to join, we have a true reason to not let them in, a true and valid reason to not let them in. And the ability to point them somewhere else. So that's why we keep this Rolodex, this person who knows all the groups, Chris Sherritt, and the website, so you can always go, this one is different. This one we really do need to keep closed because we're already 6 weeks in, valid reason, and it's an 8-week study. It's an accountability group, and we've really done this, and we've already come this far. Thank you for wanting to join us. Let's get you on the next cycle. All those things can happen. But what our language says, and then full on a Sunday morning, we technically don't want to ever have a full class. And I know you're laughing if you're in John Keeling's class. This Sunday was better. How many, by the way, Chris shared, how many chairs are in John Keeling's class?
We squeezed 66.
And why did you squeeze 66? So if y'all just wanted to know that. He said there's 66 chairs because there's 66 books of the Bible. That's how many he got in there. So yeah, he knows it's correct. But we couldn't fit a 67th. That was also a reason. You had 67 in first grade? Felt like it though, right? We have to be aware of what we're communicating in our language. And one of the things that the resource our church has created is a life group form, a life group application. So it's online. I'll take it back to the top. You can email Chris Sherritt, and he'll send you this link. And this link walks you through just all the basic questions of starting a life group. One of the first things it's going to ask you is, who's your co-leader? It is always good to have that partner and know that you have someone to rely on and walk through this with you. Suggested name of the group. Why do you want to lead this group? Why do you want this group to exist? All those things. Listening to Johnny's thing, even today, it hit me and said, even in my thinking, do we need to add something in there that makes the person walking through the creation of a life group go, understand they're picking up age boundaries when they're doing this. Like, I want you to pick, I'm inviting people of my own age, I want this to be a multi-generational group. Because sometimes I naively only ask this and I get disappointed that I only got this, you know, like the same five people I've always done things with. And so, but hopefully it will ask us all these things. It's a living document. As you're looking at this and you're experiencing creating life groups and helping a friend do that or walking along, read through this and let us know if there's some other questions that have helped you process that along the years and saying, this really saved me some heartache because I had thought about this before I started my group. But it's going to ask on there, how often do you want to meet, for how many weeks, on campus, off campus, all of that. So now the housekeeping part of that is, this is not your calendar request. there's still the part where you talk to Lance. What it does, though, is it helps the internal communication of figuring out everyone's needs and going, oh, if we put this group here, then this group can have that, and it's done. But if we don't have that information ahead of time, we can't make the puzzle fit right. And so that's why all those things are there. But it's an easy form. It won't take you long, but hopefully it'll help you think through what's going on. So when we look at the types of life groups, one of the things I didn't... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Are you wanting existing life groups to go fill that out so you have the information?
No. I think we have what we need.
Okay.
So we have either, we've snuck around and got it from you, talked to you, put all that and all the websites. If you see anything online, the description of your group, the room changes, we'll try to always keep that accurate and up to date and stuff. If y'all need us to change it, you're gonna do a change, let us know. Because otherwise, we can't prepare for it. And so all of that stuff as well. When we look at groups, I spoke in such a way of just thinking a life group is for church people. And so I had a unique experience. I was sitting in a room with a bunch of people at Green Acres, new little coffee shop, and I didn't even know what I was running into. I had just been sent the meeting invite and had two people tell me that I respected you should go. And so I didn't even really know what the meeting was about. And I joined a committee, love when that happens, on helping people be good neighbors in Tyler. City Serve, an initiative of City Fest, was all about talking about being good neighbors and thinking through of how to get people to invite their neighbors to City Fest, this evangelistic event. So one of the ways they wanted to do that was to get people to have block parties, to do things in their neighborhoods and all of this stuff. So I walk in and I'm not a good neighbor. It is something I'd been convicted on before. If I had known it was gonna be that meeting, I probably would not have shown up. Okay, and so one of my neighbors doesn't even currently live in her house and she just lets her grass grow. Another neighbor is, you know, I have all these things, barriers at which I would need to cross to get to know my neighbors. So I've let them be my excuse to get to know my neighbors. And one of them is language. The couple that lives to my right, the wife doesn't speak English, only the husband. And he is very shy. She would talk my ear off, I have a feeling. But we're not there yet. And so I go to this meeting, they're saying, hey, we need y'all to promote block parties and be good neighbors and all of these things. And the guy leading it says, like, I mean, y'all have all probably had your neighbors in your house how many times? And I was like, zero. And it really hit me on this idea of what does my life group, this people that I'm literally living life next to, look like. And I started reading a book, or reread a book I'd read before, and it's called by Rosaria Butterfield. The Gospel Comes with a House Key. If you have not read it, it is a beautiful book. It's her story of how hospitality changed her life. Rosaria is doing it. So anyhow, get on this team. I'm getting charged with putting up ideas and doing this. And after the meeting, I actually called someone who does do neighboring well, and it was Jill McKenzie, and said, Jill, I need you to talk me through a couple of things. And so it's been an interesting experience for me. And a few of the faults I have learned, or maybe the hazards I have learned that were in my own heart, is that I wanted to treat my neighborhood like my church. And this is what I meant. I wanted them to all follow the Bible. And they don't. They don't. And that was like frustrating. And it was like, well, forget this. And like, you know, whatever. And it has been an interesting aspect of learning to say, you know what? Let me start somewhere else with these neighbors. Let me start in an area where I'm going to say, I just want to get to know you. I already love you. So let's get to know each other. And Rosaria Butterfield has a quote I wanted to share. It says, invest in your neighbors for the long haul. The hundreds of conversations that make up a neighborhood, and stop thinking of conversations of neighbors as sneaky evangelistic raids into their sinful souls. This is friendship, and this is intimacy. This is life group. And if I live life with my neighbors, continue getting better at it, that's a life group creation. There was no form. There was no need to call Lance. There was no need to schedule AC. There's nothing. It is just going to be the beauty of life on life. And I hope that we never get so rigid in our Christian thinking that the only time life on life can happen is at a church building. It was really interesting when you said earlier, going to someone's home is hard. Because it is, but I had a slide and I deleted it that said, church is hard, home is easy. Because in my mind, all the details were hard. but it's just a different type of hard. It's the thing. You know, so if you came over to my house right now, I might have a panic attack. Let me think about it. But yeah, I have laundry all over my living room, and I know I have at least 2 dirty dishes in the sink, and just like all those things. I know, I'm single. It's a different standard. but it like.
Are you coming to see me? Then come see me. You're coming to see my house,
making
an appointment.
Oh. I mean, are you coming to see me or not? Thank you. and so, but this is an area I'm growing in and figuring out how to love and handle this in this way. When I become devoted, as someone devoted to the care and needs, unique gifting and experience of others, this is how I disciple them to Christ. I don't focus on my differences. I lose my rigidity, my program, but I love them through Jesus. And it is much easier for me to talk about a detail than it is a person in my daily interaction. And that is my struggle and my thing I get to pray for. I get to ask for the forgiveness and wisdom on how to be a good friend. Others is going to be the natural. The friend side is the thing that is theirs, and the rigidity of a schedule is not, or whatever. And that is okay, and we need both of each other in our lives, and I need you to rub elbows with me, and if you need me, I will rub elbows with you. And just do not forget about the gospel. Do not make it an event on Tuesdays at 9. And so that's my thought there. Okay, so a little bit ridiculous transition, but I have another video for y'all.
Is your small group a too much information extravaganza? A touchy-feely share-a-thon? A mind-numbing theological marathon? Mine was. That's why I created the world's first openly shallow small group. You guys believe the promises of God are real?
Yes, in my own life.
Sorry, it's my bad. Let me rephrase that. Yes or no? You must be ever vigilant. Nothing kills a shallow small group quicker than people opening up and sharing their feelings, asking questions that foster discussion. That's a big no-no. True or false, you had a good day today. So on a scale of 1 to 2, A, Jesus, B, Jesus, the devil, with 2 being strongly agree and 1 being strongly disagree. So if the whale is traveling at 10 miles an hour and it spews Jonah at 7 miles an hour, does anyone know the capital of North Dakota? Anyone?
Somebody give me an adverb.
If heartfelt and genuine conversation rears its ugly head, hey, buddy, well, it's time to move quickly to rid your small group.
So that's how I interpret it. I'm not a theologian or anything, but.
Nope, you're not.
I have this verse that's been on my heart.
Are they on your heart? Like just sitting there on your left ventricle?
Really, we just wanted to share that.
Fire drill, people, small group fire drill, find your exits now, let's go!
Even in prayer time, you can't let your guard down. So, does anybody have a brief, generic prayer request that you would say 20 seconds now?
My coworker's mother,
too specific.
Someone I know has been diagnosed
with... Logging down.
This person is really scared.
When I said brief, I wasn't talking about my underwear.
Person, people sick.
Oh, that's good. Anybody want to say a prayer for sick people? No one? I'll do it. Amen. All right, let's go eat. Be strong, young small group leader. If people push you to go deeper, just remind them, crazy people don't go off the shallow end. No, they go off the deep end. Shallow small group. Because when things get so deep, people drown. Why don't you join us?
There's a whole series of those y'all get to look forward to during this time, so that'll be interesting. And what I don't want going through details and things of a small group, one of the dynamics, we're kind of switching on that, they asked me to talk about was, what do we do when we find sin in our small group? And it's like, well, of course, I'm a sinner, and I'm part of the small group, and so it's going to be there. And in our church, we have some unique background experiences and callings laid on us that the Lord has asked. And it goes back to the document a lot of you have read through the years. It's So Loved. So Loved is our document that we read for anyone that is ministering with preschool children, teens, and their families. It is called So Loved because when we look at who is entering our church, and it tells us that God so loved the world. And so we have a spot for the saint and the sinner. We have a spot for the teacher that has been faithful for years and the registered sex offender. We have all of that here, which sounds, it feels icky to talk about that or weird, but that is church. And so if we live in an environment that says, we need to separate ourselves from someone who has done something wrong. That's what the world tells us. It's like, it's easier to separate and not engage. And what this policy, this manual does for us is it reminds us that it says, if we find sin in our church that is like that, we're not going to separate ourselves from that in that way. We're going to engage with them to see where they are and walk them through as far as we can until their heart or their life tells us we can go no further with them. If our behavior changed, if my behavior, my sin, is what separated us, I couldn't be friends with any of you. I sin. It's in me. I don't like it, but it's there. And I cannot look at someone else because their sin is public or labeled or more out in the open and put up that barrier. So a registered sex offender is absolutely welcome to come to our church. And we have a process for them to be a part of our church. And is in that is a document. I can send it to you all if you need to read it. But what we do is we create a shepherding team. So the minute someone fills out the blue card on Sunday, they turn it in at the desk back there, the welcome desk, anywhere in the building, we get those blue cards. Some point during the week, we run every single one of those names through the National Registered Sex Offender Database. So we do it. Once that name comes up, we check that it's actually, if the name comes up, we check and make sure it's actually that person. If you look up Paul McKenzie on that database, there are some shady Paul McKenzies. Now, luckily, ours is Robert Paul. So, Robert Paul McKenzie is not on that list. But if you do it, so sometimes we have to do a little investigation to make sure the name and the person and all of that line up. And all that, then we go to that person. There's a phone call that is made, or a connection at some point, depending on what it is, and it says, hey, we need you to know, I wanted you to know, we know. This does not stop you coming from our church. Could we hear your story so we make sure you're protected? If someone has been caught in the sexual sin of a registered sex offender, they will likely want protection. If they have been caught and we offer them protection and they don't want it, they probably didn't have the best intentions being here. It's a easy line. It is this line that we offer from the very beginning. We're willing to do whatever we can to protect you against allegations and make sure you can experience to the community of Christ at this church. Here, meet with them. We set up parameters. We set up goals. We set up all these things. It's three or four people. We sign letters, and we live in community together. It is the accountability of them knowing we know and offering them the correct place in our church, the correct access, the correct community, and the correct abundant life in Christ. Here you go. We want you to have abundant life in Christ. And so small groups, sometimes we have this surprise, and we let it come out as surprise, and it's probably heartache when someone is found out for a sin. And we need to be prepared in our hearts to handle confession of one from another. Something that is public and as grotesque as that, or as just hearing someone's daily life along things of dealing with jealousy or anger. We have to be in that sense of, I'm not asking you to be priests in this act, but I need you to be aware of how to offer scriptural counseling. And so there are many things you can read on this. You can go, many people in our church that you can go to and ask them, how would you handle this situation? How would you handle X, Y, or Z? An appropriate thing when I'm surprised, when I feel myself surprised by someone's sin, is not for me to react, but say, can I get back to you? I'm going to pray for you. This is not me not hearing you. This is not me not saying, I don't want to help you through this. It is me saying, right now, I don't have correct words for you. So for me to speak would be idle talk. And so I'm going to go away and I'm going to pray and I'm going to seek some counsel on what to do next and how to help you through this. That's friendship. That's church. That is our life together. And so I know that's the heavy thing to end on. That's why I showed the ridiculous video before it. Was just to remind us there is we don't want shallow. We don't want someone not to be able to have intimacy, to be known, to make themselves known one to another in a group. So we cannot be surprised when sin is revealed. And if you need help walking through that, ask our staff, ask people at your table that you feel that are confident, and go to the scripture. The Spirit will reveal beautiful things to you through it. It is, it's life. And so I want us to make sure we remember that tool. I don't want us to be surprised in the negative way. I had a friend who tells the story of someone coming to them to confess or a sin to them, and they were, he was going to confess a sin to someone, and it was a professor at school, and so he felt it was this very, very heavy sin, and he went and he told them, and he thought, I'm going to get kicked out. He's going to tell me I can't be a preacher. He's going to do all these things. And instead, the professor's response was, I sin too. It's not that one, but I need you to know, let's start this conversation with the beginning of this. I sin too, and I need Jesus. Have you declared you need Jesus today? And that was just a beautiful picture of starting the conversation off right and all those things. Jesus, I love him because of his compassion, his truthfulness about the human condition, his willingness to do what he did for the people like me, sinners. Jesus was not just willing to point at my mess, but he actually threw himself in it, to bear upon himself the consequences of sin to make me whole and right. We cannot be surprised when sin is in our midst, when we must choose to deal with it, not neglect it, laugh at it, or avoid it, but face it head on. Confession of my sin makes me less surprised to hear of another's sin. If I'm not practicing confession and someone confesses to me, I'm surprised by their sin because I'm probably not acknowledging my own. That's what the example that professor showed in that moment. So my prayer is a few things, and I'll pray over this at the end, but that if you have sin in your life that is unconfessed, that you'll deal with it. We don't need to live with it. That is not what we are called to do. That we would be a person that someone could confess to. That we would be the brother, the sister, the father, the mother, that would nurture someone to remind them of the story of the gospel. Have you declared you need Jesus today? I do. And so as we think through all that, know that the church is going to have to react to some situations that come up. We're going to be surprised by something. However, something's going to hit the media or with one of our members or something's going to go on. But know our reaction or whatever, we're going to do our best so that we are set up to have parameters in place, policies in place, so that we're prepared for it. We're not going to let sin surprise us, that it's in our midst. And so if y'all, again, if you need the copy of So Loved, I can send that to you. I have it on my computer. In fact, we may just email it out this week, just so everyone has it. We can do that. Thanks. These last few minutes, I'm going to let us out a bit early. I want us to talk through, can we read those? Should I make two slides? Y'all cannot read those. I'll make two slides real quick. Just a couple of table questions for y'all, and then we will dismiss from there. Any questions about So Loved or that policy or that? Yes, sir.
How do you get around the legal aspects of not reporting?
Oh, no. We are reporting. I am sorry if that was not clear. If abuse occurs on our church property, we report it. Everyone in the state of Texas is a mandatory reporter. We are going to report suspected abuse or known abuse in this church. We are going to allow a sex offender in our church by putting boundaries in their way to make sure they are protected from allegations and our kids are protected from them, just because it was a known trait. That does not mean fellowship still occurs and everything there. We will always report abuse. The first question, I'll read it to you so y'all can get started, is it easier to go from organization to disorganization than to go from disorganization to organization? Going back to Johnny Moore's question in the video. And then how have you experienced this? Is it easier to go from organization to disorganization than to go from disorganization to organization? Do you agree with them? And then how have you experienced this in your life? Okay, y'all can start. I was thinking about how to kind of close this out. Psalm 68 came to mind for me. And I want to pray it over y'all. If I'm going to pick some verses 4 through 6 and then the last few verses of the psalm and pray them over us. But they is just reminding us who we are, what we should do, our ability to sing to God, and then what we are offering others. And so if y'all would bow with me, I want to pray this over y'all. Father, I ask that your word would be the tool and the encouragement that we always turn to. We thank you for the Spirit and his reminder to and be obedient to it and follow him. And I pray for the people in this room. I pray that they will have hearts who sing to God, sing in praise of his name, extol him, and rejoice before him. I pray that they would be a person who represents you as a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, a God who is in his holy dwelling, a God who sets the lonely in families, the desolate in a homeland, who leads out the prisoners with singing. Lord, we rejoice in the way you work. We sing to you for your kingdoms of the earth, and we sing to you because you're a Lord. We sing to you who rides across the highest heavens, the ancient heavens, who thunders with a mighty voice. Lord, let us be a people who proclaim the power of God, whose majesty is over Israel, whose power is in the heavens. You, God, are awesome in your sanctuary. The God of Israel gives power and strength to his people. And so today, if someone in this room does not feel like they have the gospel, a power and a strength from you to offer people, I pray that you would remind them that they have the wonderful name of Jesus to bless others with and to remind their own soul of. We thank you for Jesus' work, his death, his burial, and his resurrection. And it's his name I pray. Amen.